Good morning. It's really great to be here with you in a place that I would call home. I practically lived here for about 15 years. I came up to Scotland as a student at the Glow Bible College. I ended up staying and working for Glow as their conference centre manager. And then I was a part of CVCC in the very early days. And it was exciting to be a part of and be instrumental in bringing CVCC here into this building. I've travelled the highs and the lows of CVCC with you until God called me and my husband to a church plant in East Kilbride. And then I left Glow and I now work for the Glasgow Prophetic Centre. So CVCC has a special place in my heart. I still celebrate with you and I still mourn with you as you travel in your journey as a church. And this place where I got married has a special place in my heart as well. So it's really good to be back with you. Are we okay with the mic a wee bit, Tinny? Yeah. I'm not used to these these mics. Hopefully it's okay. Today we're launching a new series for you called What Would Jesus Undo? What Would Jesus Undo? Now, unless you're a new Christian or you've been hiding under a rock, you may have remembered those wristbands that we used to wear with WWJD on. So when you were in a situation that you didn't know what to do, you would look down at the band and you would think, what would Jesus do in this situation? Well, it's a bit of a twist on that this morning because it's what would Jesus undo? What would he undo? What does Jesus not like? What makes him mad? What makes him sad? What breaks his heart? What would Jesus undo? That's what we're going to look at. And over the next 4 weeks, you're going to look at four different things that Jesus would like to undo. But this morning, we're going to look at the first of what would Jesus undo, which is taken from the book of Revelation. So, sorry, it's not going to be a very light message from the book of Revelation, but we'll get there. At the beginning of the book of Revelation, if you've ever read it, then there's seven letters to seven angels at seven churches. And I was going to list those seven churches for you until I got stuck on pronouncing the second name. So I'll kind of just leave that for you to go and do yourselves when you go back home. These churches are literal, actual churches. And they represent churches throughout all time. They represent the kind of churches you'll see today, the kind of Christians in those churches as well. And the universal problems that we all face in church, whenever you're living and wherever you're living. So that makes these letters relevant for us today. And it makes them apply exactly to us wherever we are right now. And at the beginning of each of these letters, Jesus writes, I know all the things you do. That might be a revelation to you today. Jesus knows what's going on. He knows what's going on. He knows your heart. And he knows the heart of your church. And so these letters are actually quite difficult and tough to read because he actually only commends two out of the seven churches. And double ouch for us today, because I'm not speaking from one of the letters that he commends. So we're going to be in for some pretty punchy stuff from Jesus today. I hope you're ready for this. You know, sometimes we only think of Jesus as the kind, gracious, gentle Jesus. And we will see him like that today. But we're going to need to hear some pretty direct, hard-hitting stuff from him first. And I might be honest with you, you might be uncomfortable. I feel uncomfortable being the one that has to preach this. So can I put my hand up and say I was told to preach on this, I didn't choose it. Because we're just going to have these no-messing, convicting words. But hang in there, because there is hope, there is light. You will see the grace and the goodness that Jesus has promised his children. So hang in there. So today we're jumping straight over to the seventh letter in Revelation, and it's to the church at Laodicea. And you'll find that in Revelation, and you can follow that in your notes, or I think it's going to come up on the screen, or in your Bible. So Revelation 3, 14. Excuse me a minute. It says, "Write these letters to the angel of the church in Laodicea. This is the message from the one who is the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of God's new creation. I know all the things you do, that you are neither hot nor cold. I wish you were one or the other, but since you are like lukewarm water, neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. You say, 'I am rich, I have everything I want, I don't need a thing.' But you don't realize that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. So I advise you to buy gold from me, gold that has been purified by fire. Then you will be rich. Also buy white garments from me so you will not be shamed by your nakedness, and ointment for your eyes so you will be able to see. I correct and I discipline everyone I love, so be diligent and turn from your indifference. Look, look, I stand at the door and knock. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and I will share a meal with you together as friends. Those who are victorious will sit with me on my throne, just as I was victorious and sat with my Father on his throne. Anyone with ears, let them hear, must listen to the Spirit and understand what is being said to the churches." Oh, I said it was pretty ouchy, didn't I? It's pretty hard-hitting and direct there. But very quickly and very clearly, we can see the problem that the church at Laodicea had that breaks Jesus' heart. And if you're writing down in your notes, what would Jesus undo at the church of Laodicea? Well, number one, their spiritual indifference. Their spiritual indifference. It says in 15, "You are neither hot nor cold. I wish you were one or the other, but since you are like lukewarm water, I will spit you out of my mouth." Now, as soon as the church read those words, "You are like lukewarm water," they totally understood what Jesus was saying. Because Jesus knew that the church at Laodicea would know what lukewarm water tasted like and what the problem was. You see, even though the Laodicean was a strong city, it had an inadequate water supply. So they had to build huge aqueducts to bring water in from other places, because obviously that was a problem. Now, one place they brought from was from Colossae, which was known for its cold water, but they brought another one from Hierapolis, I think I'm saying that right, where it had hot springs. So both were good and had purpose. But obviously, by the time those two water channels came into Laodicea, it was neither hot nor cold anymore. It was pretty tepid, lukewarm, and yucky. So he was saying, you know what that water tastes like in your mouth. You want to spit that water out, and that's what you taste like to me. "I know all the things you do," Jesus said. "I know how you're living. I see your day. I see your life. I see your heart towards me. And it sickens me." They are not words I want to hear from Jesus, are they? "You sicken me." If I was to ask you today, because I've not seen you in a while, how's things? How's your church going? How's your personal walk with Jesus? How's your relationship with Jesus? How would you answer me? No, I actually had this type of conversation the other day with a friend, and I had this answer. Yeah, churches. Yeah, ticking along. Ticking along. And boof, I felt it right there. And I heard, Jesus didn't die for ticking along. And so he says to the Laodiceans, your lukewarmness is distasteful in my mouth, and it turns me sick, and I want to spit you out. Your deeds are neither hot nor cold. You're just lukewarm. You're spiritually stale. You're detached. You don't care. You're not bothered. You're happy to just be ticking along, ticking the boxes. You're just comfortable. But feel Jesus' heart here when he says this. He's thinking, look what I've done for you. Look what I've given you, and you're just whatever. Doesn't matter. Kids crush your heart in the same way, don't they? I was shouting at my kids before I came out this morning, look at that breakfast that I've just spent time making for you. And they've just left it, or there's toast lying all over the floor, or they were jumping on the bed. And I said, look at that ironing that I've just done. It's now all over the floor. And your kids just look at you and go, whatever, Mum. She's off on one again. If that breaks my heart. Imagine how heartbroken Jesus was. Their indifference broke his heart. And he wants to spit them out of his mouth, his very words. What would Jesus undo? Their spiritual indifference. Tough question. Is he speaking to you today? Is he speaking to your church today? Now, I'm sitting right here with you, literally hearing those words, thinking, is he speaking to my life? Is he speaking to my church life? These are big questions. But maybe you're thinking, oh, I don't know, actually. I wouldn't have said I was lukewarm. I'm maybe not on fire, but I'm not cold, so maybe I am. And I could have given you a long list of characteristics that would have shown if you are lukewarm. But I thought, well, why don't we look at the opposite, the total opposite of a heart that is on fire for God. And I went to Mark's gospel, and I picked up on two stories very quickly. And in Mark 2, it says, while Jesus was preaching the word of God, four men arrived carrying a paralyzed man. But when they realized they couldn't get to Jesus because of the great crowds, they climbed on top of the house, and it says they tore away at the roof. Another translation says they dug into the roof. Now, that takes effort, doesn't it? And they broke through and lowered the man down on the stretcher in front of them, and we read because of their faith, he was healed. Later on, very quickly in Mark, a huge crowd is following Jesus, pressing him in on all sides. And there's a woman that has been bleeding badly for 12 years. But she still pushes through the crowd. She has heard about Jesus. She needs to get near him. So she pushes right in, so desperate to touch, just to touch, the hem of his prayer shawl. And she was healed. Can you see? So desperate were these people to be near Jesus, to touch him, because they knew that's where the life was. That's where the healing was going to come from. They knew that's where the real treasure was. They knew that's where they needed to be. So against all odds, they are so desperate that they pursued Jesus until they got him. The Laodiceans? Not so much. Not so much. See the difference? Does that help? Know where your heart is? Oh, it was nice to go to church this morning, you know. It would have been nice if Jesus turned up, but, well, I got to chat to so-and-so about the film I saw the other night, and you know, the worship songs, they were lovely, and the speaker had a funny accent, you know, and I had a nice morning. Am I so bothered to meet with Jesus that I will do anything and everything to do so? Is that your heart? Jesus is not okay with ticking along, and he is not okay with lukewarmness. Sorry, it doesn't stop there. Point number two in your notes. What would Jesus undo? What else would Jesus undo? Their self-sufficiency and reliance. their self-sufficiency and reliance. Verse 17, you say, I am rich. I have everything I want. I don't need a thing. And you don't realize that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Boy, he doesn't hold back here, does he? He doesn't cushion the blow in any way. This city was rich. Boy, this city was rich. In human terms, this is a strong city. But here they are, receiving the strongest rebuke. That's the irony. They think they're strong. They think they're sorted. They're self-reliant. Everything is good. Everything's going well. They think they're perfect. But actually, in Jesus' eyes, they are far from it. That's the problem with self-belief and sufficiency, is that there is no room for Jesus. There is no need for Jesus, seemingly, and you can't see him. They don't need God to provide for them. They have everything they want, so what more could Jesus give them? They think they're already full and satisfied, and they think they have everything they need, so Jesus is surplus. Bill Johnson, I love a good Bill Johnson quote. There's always one in my preachers. Whatever you have set your affection upon will affect every environment you enter. Whatever you have set your affection upon will affect every environment you enter. And that's what has happened here with the Laodiceans. Outside the church, their hearts and their lives, their attention and their affections is on money and power and self-reliance and human strength, total world focus. And that mindset has then creeped into the church, making what was a church that was on fire and passionate for God now lukewarm. They had so much stuff in their lives. And not just material stuff, but just stuff going on, stuff that makes life busy. You know your stuff, the stuff that fills your life. There is so much in your life that you can't see him. Jesus can't get through. Doesn't that sound familiar? I'm feeling convicted here. I don't know about you. Do you know the biggest cause of spiritual indifference is, and you can write this in your notes, distractions. All this stuff just causes distractions, distractions, distractions. We are so easily distracted. Well, I know I am. The continual beep of your phone, the constant background noise, we're just so distracted. And you know, I thought I was doing really well because I started preparing this message about 3 weeks ago. And I thought, yay, you know, I'm ahead of the game here. And then the Smith's Toys magazine catalogue came through the door. And that was it, game over. Because at the same time, I had a WhatsApp photo from the school mums with the offer from Smith saying, for every £50 you spend, you will save £10. So that was it. Game over. I had to spend the whole week then not only thinking about and discussing with Alan and what could we buy this for and choosing all these Christmas presents so that I could save the £10 that this was on offer for. But then I realized, Smith's sometimes is more expensive than like Asda's or Argos. So I then had to research every single toy that I was going to buy to see if I could actually get it cheaper somewhere else. So my head is now busted by this point. And then I had to try and see when could I actually fit in a trip to the fort, because it was only on for like a little weekend. One friend actually drove to Paisley to get what she needed. Well, there's your £10 pretty much gone, isn't it, straight away. And what I was hoping to save, I had just spent in time and stress. Just to save £10. Are you kidding me? And I had that revelation in the middle of the Smith's Toys store. Are you kidding me? What am I doing? Was anybody else there that weekend? There was chaos surrounding me, with people just throwing things in their trolleys piled up high. There was chaos raging in my head, and there was chaos outside the shop while Alan was trying to keep the kids from inside the shop seeing me and what I was buying for them. Do you know? I'm not getting at Christmas because I love Christmas, all the money that you're going to spend on it. But you know, when this stuff consumes us, when it takes all our attention off God, when our money and our time and our thoughts are just so on those things and it distracts us, that's where the problem lies. These things are not a problem in themselves, but they distract us from Him. When we become more obsessed and passionate about golf or cars or shopping trips and holidays, that you've not got any time left for Him or any energy, let's be honest, that suddenly, your passion for Him just fades. You begin to see Him less and less in all that clutter until you just can't see Him anymore. And tragically, we're not that bothered. Oh, God forgive us. God forgive us. I get it. I totally get it. Life is full. Life happens. But very quickly, the worries of this life become the same as the world's. The way I spend my money is the same as the world. The way I spend and waste my time is the same as the world. It is no different. My values are no different. And then Jesus, you wake up, where is Jesus? He's just shoved into a corner, and we wonder why we don't see Him on a Sunday morning. For the Laodiceans, it was their material wealth that got them into the thinking that they were fine and that they were just ticking along nicely. But boy, they were wrong. Jesus says they were poor and blind and naked. He was not impressed with their lives or their excuses, because the condition of their heart then went into His church. Church on the inside was no different to the outside. And that broke His heart. That broke His heart. And so He says in those verses, I correct and discipline those I love. He loves them. That's why He's saying this stuff. He loves them. So He says, be diligent, turn from your indifference, come on. He's saying, come on, open your eyes. Hear His heart again. He's saying, come on, open your eyes. Please change your heart. Please come back to me. And so this is it. This is where we see His kindness. This is where we see His goodness. This is where we see the mercy of God. Here's the light and the hope and the grace for His children. Because He literally stands before them, even though He can see how they live in, He stands before them and says, look, I stand at the door and I knock. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and feast with you. I will come in and feast with you. In other words, take your eyes off yourself and all this stuff and all this clutter just for a minute and put me first in your lives again. It's not too late. I'm here. I'm here, ready to come in and feast with you. Do you not love that word? Feast. A royal feast is waiting for us. Does anything on earth compare to those treasures that are just freely for us in Jesus? Absolutely not. So why do we get so caught up in it all? He doesn't want you not to enjoy these things. He wants to enjoy them with you, but He wants to be first place in them. And that reminds me of the story of Zacchaeus. I've enjoyed reading this story this week. For anybody who doesn't know, Zacchaeus was a tax collector, and boy, he had wads of money. Do you remember the story? But he was eager to see Jesus. He was eager to see what all the fuss was about. So remember the story? He was short, so he had to climb up the tree. Remember the song from your childhood? And the Passion Translation says, Jesus says to him, Zacchaeus, come down. I'm coming to stay at your house for tea. And it says, he scurried down and came face to face with Jesus. Game changer right there for Zacchaeus. And it says, he joyously welcomes Jesus into his house. And standing in front of Jesus, his heart is changed in an instant. And do you know what he says to Jesus then? All that I have, see all this stuff, all this money that I've accumulated, I'm going to give it all to the poor. And see if I've cheated anyone, and promise I'll pay them back four times as much that I stole. And because of his heart, the position of his heart, Jesus says, today life has come to your house, for I came to seek and to save those that were lost. Standing in front of Jesus, his heart is changed in an instant, and none of that stuff matters anymore. Look, see me. I stand at the door and I'm knocking. Come face to face with me again, and I will give you life. I will give you life. Now, how do we do that? How do we come face to face with God? How do we do that practically, church? You know, it's one thing to know that Jesus hates it when we're indifferent, and it makes him sad when we're not bothered and when things get in the way. But when we've heard that voice and we feel convicted, what can we do? What can we do to change our hearts? What can we do to boil up that tepid water and make it warm again or on fire again for him? Well, sorry, I only wrote this bit yesterday, so it's not in your notes, but you may want to write this down in the additional box if there's space, because I think you'll find this maybe helpful tomorrow. Come face to face with Jesus in his word. In his word, number one. Read his word and keep reading his word. Talk about it, get excited about it. I don't know about you, but when my head is doing this, read his word, and it focuses it all down. So number one, read his word. Number two, come face to face with Jesus in prayer. Number two, in prayer, talk to him all the time about everything and anything, and listen to what he has to say back. Sometimes, if you're a gabber like me, I do all the talking. Shh, quiet it all down. Give him a bit of space to answer back. Number three, come face to face with Jesus in worship. Number three, in worship. We don't have to spend just a little bit of time, but our whole lives have to be in worship. Worship isn't just a time slot. It's a position of your heart. You need to take time out of your head and out of the chaos of your lives and get into the throne room and see it all from his perspective and live in that place. Change the channel on your earphones, on your car stereo, saturate your house, leave it on all day. Just have worship playing all the time and praise him continually. Just keep praising him. Whatever's going on in life, keep praising him. That was number three. Come face to face with Jesus. Number four, together. Keep meeting together. Church is vital for your survival. Don't meet up. Meeting together. Don't give up meeting together. Number five, come face to face with Jesus serving each other. Serving each other. When you give up something graciously to help others, you'll quickly see Jesus. You will see Jesus when you serve. Come face to face with Jesus. Number six, by using your gifts. By using your gifts. He's given you gifts to bless him and to bless others. Use them. Use them. And number seven, come face to face with Jesus by confessing your sin. Confess your sin quickly and forgive others quickly. you know, I stopped there at number 7 because number 7 is a perfect number. But literally, that list could go on and on and on, couldn't it? But it's overwhelming. If you look at each of those things on the list, they're massive, isn't they? Each one in themselves. So I'm not going to motivate you by saying, go home and do all that list. I'm probably going to put you off, and you'll give up by Tuesday. So let's make this a little bit more straightforward and maybe a bit more attainable. Every day, or every week, every month, whatever works for you, ask Jesus what he would like you to focus on. Now, it might be different from the person next to you, but what does Jesus want you to focus on? Now, maybe just now, as you're writing them down, one might be jumping out. Circle it quickly. Take the moment and circle that and ask God to help you focus on that tomorrow, today. Maybe you'll just need to start with a really good declutter. I love a good decluttering. Maybe you need to get rid of some stuff that's just getting in the way. Now, that's not necessarily material things. It could be anything, your busyness, your friends sometimes, or habits. Do you know your stuff. You know what clutters your lives. I'm sure you're thinking of something already. Ask God, pardon you, to clutter it, to declutter and get rid of some of these things. Maybe it's going to be something you need to sacrifice to show that your heart is surrendered. Do you need to give up the money that you spend on Chinese's or coffees in a week and give it to God, whatever your thing is? I'm seeing a few eyes going, do I have to really? Do you know, God doesn't always ask us to do it, but he just wants to know that you'd be willing if he did ask. Faith. Do something that requires faith. Take a risk. Tomorrow when you get up, think, I'm going to take a risk today. Maybe that's sharing your faith. Maybe you're praying for healings or miracles. Maybe you're thinking, do you know, I'm going to use that gift that God has given me, and I'm going to step out in faith. I'm here today stepping out in faith and said yes to come. And you know, when you feel inadequate and when you feel empty, that's when God fills you. When you feel weak, that's when God is strong and is you come face to face with Jesus. When you put yourself out there, when you're totally and utterly reliant on him, he turns up. You see him in those moments. Do you know, it can be big or small. It could be something as little as turning up for church early, says me, or you could stay late and help the guys clear up the equipment. It could be something big, like I watched the advert, was it Nationwide? Payday is save day, or something like that, isn't it? Well, if payday is giveaway day, that on that first day that you get your paycheck, God says, I want to give, want you to give however much away. Big or small, it doesn't matter. All these changes in your life will make a difference in your life, and it will make a difference to your kingdom. And soon you'll wake up and see that your heart is being fanned into flame. And it will be burning more for Jesus. And you will see those flames getting hotter, and you will actually feel alive. You will feel alive. Our God is a jealous God. Did you know that? He is a jealous God. He wants your attention. He wants to be the one that provides for you. He wants to be the one that you totally and utterly depend on. He wants to be the one that just is the one. And he says in those verses, buy from me, then you'll be rich. Buy clothes from me, and then your nakedness will be clothed. Buy the ointment for your eyes, and then I'll open them. You will see. Look for me first. Take your eyes off everything else and see me and see what I'm doing. We have a jealous God. Do you know, it was hard to hear Jesus' words and discipline at the beginning, wasn't it? It was ouchy stuff. And he gave them a really good kick up the bum, didn't he? But don't you think we all need a good kick up the bum sometimes to get going? I know I certainly do. But those words, however harsh they were gracious. They were merciful, and actually they were kind. If you read them, they were kind. Why? Because he was fighting for them. He could have gone, I'm not bothered with you either, if you're going to be like that. No, he wants them not to miss him. He doesn't want them to miss this, so he's fighting for them. That's what his words are. They are fighting words. He is literally pulling them up, isn't he? Okay, he sees where they are, and it's not okay. But he sees where they could be. He sees where they should be. He sees their destiny. He sees their promise, and he sees their future glory. That's what Jesus sees. Verse 22, I love this verse. It's jumped out to me more this week than ever before. Verse 22, read it in your notes. Those who are victorious will sit with me on my throne. Oh, grasp that. If we are victorious in all this, we get to sit on the throne with Jesus. He is yanking them up into their rightful place. Sit it in the heavenly realms. Oh. And he is doing the same for us. He is fighting for us every day, pulling us up into the place that we should be living from. Remember I said that these letters in the book of Revelation address universal hearts and universal problems. Well, this is a universal call to the whole church today. Wake up. Wake up. Look at me. See me. I stand at the door and I knock. Hear my voice. Let me in, church. Come face to face with me again. Could the call be any louder? Could it be any clearer? And could the incentive and the promise be any more amazing? You will sit on his throne and share in his glory. Come on, church. Wake up and see Jesus. Worship band, if you're coming back up, we'll just pray. And if anybody feels convicted this morning or has heard God's voice, then me and my friend Nicola, who works with me at the Glasgow Prophetic Centre, we're happy to pray with you. But let's just pray before we sing our last song. Jesus, we hear your voice. Jesus, we hear you. Would you open our eyes and give us a fresh revelation of you today and all that you have for us and all that we need to be as your people and your church. We come face to face with you now and we thank you for fighting for us. That you love us so much that you are fighting for us, for your kingdom and your glory. Amen.